You are tuned to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The following program is a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Showman.
Hi, this is Roy Showman, and welcome to Salvation is from the Jews, the show on Radio Maria that celebrates the Jewish roots of the Catholic faith, or seen the other way around, the fulfillment, the full fruition of Judaism in the Catholic Church. Now, if you were with us last week, you will remember that we had a very special guest on the show, David Moss, who is the president of the Association of Hebrew Catholics. And we had a very rich conversation, which began with his witness testimony and continued into the beginning of a discussion about the role and purpose of the Association of Hebrew Catholics and some more general issues around the presence and meaningfulness of Jews in the Catholic Church today. Since we ran out of time on last week's show, David was kind enough to agree to come back on this week and be our guest this week and continue the conversation. And so I'm very much looking forward to doing that. So let me see. David, are you there?
Yes, I am, Roy.
Great. Let me just back up and say, if you did miss last week's show, and if you want to hear it, or any other of the previous shows of Salvation is from the Jews, they are archived on the Radio Maria website, radiomaria.us, and also on my website, salvationisfromthejews.com. And on that website, you can find much more information about Jews in the Catholic Church, more witness testimonies of Jews who have become Catholic, and links to other organizations that are connected with the entry of Jews into the Church, including the website of the Association of Hebrew Catholics, which can be found directly at www.HebrewCatholic.org. Sorry for that digression, David. Welcome.
Oh, thanks. Great to be here, Roy.
Thanks. Well, we had just really begun the meat of the conversation about the Association of Hebrew Catholics last week, and you gave a little rundown of its history, but maybe a good place to begin today would be to talk about the aims and the purpose and the mission statement of the Association of Hebrew Catholics, what it is and why it exists and what it hopes to accomplish.
Okay, sure. Father Elias Friedman established the association in 1979, and the stated purpose was to preserve the identity and the heritage of the Jew within the Catholic Church, enabling him to serve his Lord, his Church, his people, and all peoples in accord with the irrevocable gifts and calling of the people Israel, a calling that began in the Old Testament by the calling of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Father Friedman believed that this was a new phase of salvation history, which the conclusion he came to because of a reading of the signs of the times. And I would just touch these just by naming them. We can go into them if you wish. One was the great apostasy of the Gentile populations that made up the church, an apostasy that Father Friedman believed began with the Protestant Reformation, establishing hundreds and thousands of competing renditions of the gospel, and therefore helping to bring about the demise of Christendom. The second great sign was the return of the Jews to the Holy Land in 1948, 3 years after the conclusion of the Holocaust. And even more significantly was the recapture of Jerusalem in 1967, which Father believed, as I do, was a fulfillment of the prophecy of Jesus in Luke 21:24, that Jerusalem would be trodden down by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles was fulfilled. The third great sign was a tremendously large number of Jews who have been coming to the faith, both in the Protestant world and in the Catholic world, since the end of the Second World War. Another major sign was the Second Vatican Council. Besides all the other things the council did, it began to establish a new exploration of the mystery of Israel and to take up a new evangelization of the nations that had once been Christian and had ceased to be so. Those were the major signs, and Father Friedman believed that the time was now that the Jews within the church ought to take up once again their collective witness to the truths of God. And now, in addition to all those truths revealed in the Old Testament, were the new truths revealed by Jesus in the New Testament, the truth of Jesus and the truth of his church and the sacraments.
Do you have a formal mission statement?
Yes, the mission of the association is to preserve the identity and heritage of the Jews within the church, of the people of Israel, so that they may serve the Lord, his church, and all peoples within the mysteries of their irrevocable calling.
Beautiful. I must say that maybe I'm a member of the Association of Hebrew Catholics for the wrong reason, because I'm tremendously grateful for the existence of the Association of Hebrew Catholics, simply because it is an Association of Hebrew Catholics. And I know that I was very lonely when I, as a Jew, first entered the church. It felt as though I were the first Jew in history to enter the church. I couldn't find another Jewish Catholic, and I was just dying to find one and meet one and talk about matters of mutual interest and just kind of commune with them. I called the local chancery and asked if there was any way I could get in touch with other Jews who had entered the church. They put me in touch with the Jewish Catholic Dialogue Office, which was busy trying to convince me that I was a mistake to be a Jew who was interested in entering the Catholic Church. And so, I mean, I was just, you know, swinging out there in the breeze, just really dying to have a community of Jews in the church. And so I know that doesn't seem to be the mission statement itself, but it's a tremendously valuable ancillary mission that you perform.
Yes, and I've met many, many people. We've convinced, or not that we ever convince anyone, it's always the work of the Holy Spirit, but we have done very little in the way of active evangelization of Jews, but yet we've had the experience that you just spoke about, Roy, of people coming and talking to us briefly, people who are already on their journey, already asking questions, already looking into Jesus and his church. And the very fact that we existed was simply a moral boost, that they weren't outside the normal pale of things, that this was an okay thing to do because there were other Jews that had traveled that path before them.
A friend of mine, you had a conference a couple of years ago in St. Louis at the Association of Hebrew Catholics.
Yes.
And a friend of mine who came said it was the first time in her life that she felt whole.
Yeah.
Was coming out of that conference. I mean, it's a tremendous service because you're talking about Jews who are interested in entering the Catholic Church, but there's also the issue of Jews who have already entered the Catholic Church who need some, feel a hunger for some kind of community so they don't feel like, you know, there's some kind of, you know, half lion, half human hybrid or something, but there's something natural and normal and fruitful about being a Jew in the Catholic Church.
Well, that's true. And that was essentially what Father Friedman meant by preserving the identity and the heritage of Jews in the church. The identity is that collective reality of Jews who belong to a single family, a single genealogical record, an ethnic, a divine ethnic identity, and the witness that the association provides to other Jews is exactly provides that witness. Hopefully, as time passes on, that witness will even grow stronger.
Now, you mentioned in passing that one of the signs of the times that Father Friedman identified was the large number of Jews coming to the faith. Yeah. I know that everybody is kind of dying to have some numbers to attach to that, and it's very hard to do. Do you have anything along the lines of numbers?
Well, I've heard numbers that range from 200,000 to 300,000 to well over 1,000,000. And it certainly rivals most other periods of history, or going all the way back to the time of Acts, to the apostolic period. But we don't have the numbers. One of the problems is that when you enter the church on the baptismal record, they don't record the fact that you're an Israelite. So you only have anecdotal stories of people who know about Jews who've entered. But we did a rough, and then in the Messianic Jewish world, they're very obvious because they're very active, very dynamic. And so I've seen numbers from 200,000 to 300,000 all the way to 1,000,000. What the actual numbers are, I have no idea.
I presume that the Association of Hebrew Catholics has the full endorsement of the church hierarchy. That's completely kosher, so to speak.
Well, not in a formal sense. To get the full endorsement, you have to become an entity within the church. And we're not. We're a lay apostolate.
But you have the blessing of your bishop and so forth.
We have the blessing Archbishop Burke, now Cardinal Burke, He was the one who welcomed us into St. Louis. The current Archbishop Carlson has blessed us. The prior bishop, when we were in Michigan, gave us a blessing. So we have those blessings, and we also have the implied blessing or approval of many Catholic theologians and priests within the church. So we have a growing number of people. We also have plenty of opposition. I don't want anyone to think that we're a shoo-in. There's many people who believe, and I won't use the language they use, but who believe that we are a cancer in the church and who will fight us. But these are also some of the people who don't believe the Holocaust took place or that Israel shouldn't exist. It falls into the same category of people who believe these things.
Let me go down that road a little bit, in part because it's been introduced. I think I know to whom you're referring, what groups you're referring to, since I think I have a similar cancerous nature to them. Sometimes these are actually people who reject the Second Vatican Council precisely because it exonerated the Jews of the charge of deicide. In other words, some of their schismatic tendencies to reject the Church of today flows out of a animosity towards the Jewish people and a resentment that the Second Vatican Council so strongly sort of gave them their blessing and taught, you know, then John Paul II spoke of them as the as our elder brothers in the faith and so forth. And that it's actually anti-Semitism can be behind not only their rejection of a Jewish presence in the church, but actually a rejection of the post-Vatican II church.
Yeah, I think those things all flow together. And there's also a large number of people who've never really studied or learned about the Jewish roots, and they've picked up attitudes and ideas that are not always good, but there's nothing of ill will in them. They just don't know. And that's part of our work to help Catholics learn the Jewish roots of their faith. And as they learn it, they appreciate Judaism, they appreciate Jews, and they appreciate their own faith even more. Mm-hmm. So it's a long haul. It's something that Vatican II begun. And we present one aspect of it.
And to be fair, I suppose, to this sort of loyal opposition, it is true that the positive attitude towards Jews and Judaism that has been reflected in this century and especially since Vatican II wasn't always the case in the church. And they might somewhat legitimately get stuck with older statements of saints, older expressions of hostility and fear of Judaizing that go all the way back to the church fathers. Right. And they may be a little bit too attached to them and not ready to let go to them. Because it is true that in other centuries, some saints, some popes, even some church councils have spoken quite negatively about Jews and Judaism.
Yes. But it's interesting that except for some statements in one council, there has not been any formal teaching in the church that what you might want to call anti-Semitic.
Not formal teaching, but when things are written by saints or written by well-regarded theologians or whatever, you know, people tend to think of them as a Catholic expression.
Well, the transformation of human beings is a very slow process, and it takes centuries to learn the lessons of one generation and pass them on to future generations. So,
in this case, perhaps even millennia.
Even millennia.
One of the very positive feedbacks that you have gotten, and one of the very positive signs of this very favorable attitude towards Jews and Judaism of recent times, was reflected in a rather unique interview you did with Cardinal then Archbishop Burke. And I think in that interview you touched on many of the hot points, many of the most controversial issues that concern Jews who have entered in the Catholic Church. So I would be grateful if you could discuss, some of the questions you asked him and some of his responses, just kind of show what the church thinking is today about the role and appropriateness of a Jewish presence and even a visible Jewish presence in the church.
Okay, I asked at that time the Archbishop Burke 5 questions, and these were the ones that we, as you mentioned, we've been challenged on. The first question concerned the continuing election of the Jewish people, those Jews who have entered the church, been baptized. We've had a lot of people who would say, no, the election is fulfilled in baptism, and after baptism, there's nothing distinctive about being a Jew versus not being a Jew. And I asked, of course, I didn't believe that, but it's one thing for me to believe something, it's another thing for what the church has to say. The church has never really dealt in any official capacity or formal capacity with these issues, except by inference. And as you mentioned, some popes, some teach, some saints, some councils by inference, but never formally. And we'll get to that in a second. Regarding the continuing election, Archbishop Burke's answers were, he said a lot, but the answers were very simple. What God has done once is done forever. God doesn't go back on his promises. God doesn't go back on the things he's established. So the election of the Jewish people remains true today as it was when he elected them through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that election persists in the church.
That's right. So the election of the Jews who do not recognize Jesus continues, and the election of the Jews who do recognize Jesus and his church also continues in their election as Jews as well as in their adoption into the Catholic Church.
That's right.
Let me read a quote of his from the near the end of that answer, just because it's so beautiful. This is Archbishop, now Cardinal Burke speaking. Once God made that election of the Hebrew nation, of the Jewish people, to be the light to the nations and to be the instrument by which all peoples would be welcomed into the household of God, he never turns back from that election. It remains today as treasured in the church as it has been from the beginning of that election. So a Hebrew Catholic has a very distinctive witness to give in the church, and we ought to recognize that. End of quote. So he's giving you his blessing for this distinctive witness of Hebrew Catholics in the church.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, his second question, concerned the collective nature of that election. Is the election simply that of an individual, which in which case baptism would have the same effect and the distinctive election wouldn't mean any much? Or is it the election of a people? And he also agreed it was the election of a people. And that people, Israel, the Jewish people in the church, retain that collective nature, the collective election. And towards what purpose? To give the witness to Jesus and his church, just like the collective nature of the people gave a witness to the truth of God and his revelation in the Torah before Jesus. So that continues.
And again, let me read just a nugget from that answer of his, because just so positive. This is Archbishop Burke, quote, "It seems to me that is a great gift to the Catholic Church that the collective identity as the chosen people would be cultivated." So he's speaking quite kindly of you, David.
Yes.
And of your work.
Yes. To have come to St. Louis was a greater blessing than I could have ever anticipated when he invited us here. In fact, I wasn't sure. He was such an orthodox man, so well educated, well-formed in canon law. And the first spring we moved here to St. Louis in 2006, in 2007 we had our first Seder, and I invited him here. And I invited him with some concern that if he didn't like it, we'd have to move to another city.
Yeah.
Well, he loved it. He loved it. And he never stopped talking about it for 2 weeks afterwards, because he said you could see, experience the actual fulfillment that was wrought in Jesus and the church by living out, by participating in the Seder. Yeah. So he was a tremendous blessing.
And to put that in a little context, because I obviously wasn't involved with the activity indirectly at the time, before that happened, there were even American bishops who suggested that it was improper to have a Passover Seder in a Catholic setting. That somehow it was insulting to Jews or it offended them, and therefore, out of respect for the Jewish community, parishes shouldn't engage in seders illustrating the Last Supper and so forth. And, of course, that was just individual opinions, and individual opinions heavily colored by the sensitive feelings of the Jewish community. But it was very useful to have this counterweight to that coming from Archbishop Burke.
That's right, that's right.
Let me read a quote from him from in the interview directly related to that Seder that you invited him to. "When I participated, for instance, in St. Louis in the Seder Supper, the Christian Seder Supper, I saw this in a wonderful way, how the Hebrew Catholics were bringing through this celebration an ever deeper appreciation of the meaning of the coming of Christ into the world, of his saving death, and then of the continuation of the fruits of his saving death through the Holy Eucharist. Close quote. And let me put in a little commercial announcement. I think that if anyone out there would like to experience a Passover Seder in the light of Christ, one of these sort of Hebrew Catholic Passover Seders that illustrate the fulfillment of the promise of Judaism in the Catholic Church using the vehicle of the Seder, which is an ideal vehicle because, of course, the Last Supper was simultaneously the last sacramental Passover Seder and the first sacramental Catholic Mass. They could perhaps get in touch with the Association of Hebrew Catholics. I know they could get in touch with me through my website. Every year I end up celebrating perhaps a dozen of these in different parishes and Catholic communities for that purpose, to show the fulfillment of Judaism in the Catholic Church. End of commercial announcement.
Well, we can add another one. We have a little book called You Shall Be My Witnesses, which you can go to our website, our web store, and order, and it has Archbishop Burke's interview in here if you'd like to study it and make notes on it on the official. It's okay. Also available at no cost on our website as a PDF. We also have a DVD that has the whole interview that you can watch.
So, well, I can see we're both like both Jewish and Catholic because, okay, you have the booklet, which you can sell and buy or you can get for free, and you have the DVD, which you sell and people can buy, but actually the video is up for free also on your website, right?
That's right.
So one hand's Jewish, one hand's Catholic. Should we go on with the interview and other nuggets that came out of it?
The third question that I asked him was about observing various Jewish traditions, Jewish feast days, but in the light of Christ. And again, Archbishop Burke thought that was a wonderful one, and I think that was the one where he talked about the Passover Seder, if I'm not mistaken. Well, maybe that was another answer. But anyway, he answered it, and yes, he doesn't see any problem. He thinks it's wonderful. It's a tremendous contribution, witness to God's work throughout salvation history, and as long as it's done in the light of Christ.
And again, this is in the context of earlier attitudes which were not so favorable, including, unfortunately, one of St. Thomas Aquinas, that it was actually a mortal sin for Jews who had entered the Catholic Church to continue Jewish ritual observances. And I think that the resolution of that rather superficially apparent contradiction is simply that were a Jew in the Catholic Church to observe the Jewish ritual thinking it was necessary for salvation, thinking it was part of the process of salvation, it would be a denial of the saving act of Christ. But should they celebrate it in some other way, such as to give more honor and glory to Jesus for what he did and how he did it, it, of course, wouldn't at all have that character.
That's right. And he writes, I'll quote like you were, I would encourage it very much. And I don't know of anything in the church which says that this is prohibitive or this is wrong for Hebrew Catholics to have these special devotions particular to their own heritage. And I would add, this is actually now the heritage of every Catholic, since the Old Testament and all that preceded it belongs to them as well.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of two saint stories, to just give this a little bit more of an imprimatur. One is that St. Edith Stein, after she became a Catholic, would go to synagogue with her Jewish mother and follow the synagogue prayers out of her Catholic breviary. Because, of course, they were the same prayers because they were largely the Psalms. So she would follow the reading of the Psalms in the synagogue out of her Catholic breviary, which actually touched and moved her mother very much. And the other is that I know I had a little interlude with the Carthusians. And at the time I heard of a fellow Carthusian monk, I shouldn't say fellow because I wasn't genuinely one, but I was just looking into it, of a Carthusian monk from a Jewish background. And of course the Carthusian monks spend literally hours a day reciting the Psalms. And he would recite them in Hebrew. He would recite them out of the Hebrew Psalms. And his superior, the prior, thought that was a great idea, a beautiful idea. So, and in fact, I'll digress with a little bit of a personal story. Early in my conversion, actually before I entered the Catholic Church, when I was still anti-Catholic as a kind of, proud Jew, but one who had come to recognize that Jesus was the Messiah and had come to recognize that the Blessed Virgin Mary was very special. But I was still anti-Catholic. I found myself in a Carthusian monastery with a tremendous chip on my shoulder and anti-Catholicism. But I would join the monks in prayer in the chapel every night. They would break sleep every night and sleep from about 8:30 to 11:30 and then go to the chapel and pray matins together for about 3 hours and then get another 3 hours of sleep or so before the morning prayers. So I would be there in the middle of the night standing in these stalls with these mostly elderly monks chanting in Latin. And they'd be chanting, "Oh, Jerusalem, should I ever forget you? Let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth," and so forth. And I looked around and I said, "Hey, wait a minute. These guys are all wannabe Jews." So I think the unity and the continuation of the liturgy speaks powerfully to the inner unity and continuation between Judaism and the Catholic Church. Sorry for that digression, David. I think you had more questions and answers with the...
Yes. This fourth question is the one that we get hit with the most in terms of being critical of us and our work. And this is the statement by Pope Eugenius IV in his Bull of Union with the Copts in 1442 from the Council of Florence. And I'll just read a brief sentence that was put out there. "Therefore, the Holy Roman Church denounces all who, after the promulgation of the gospel, observe circumcision, the Sabbath, and other legal prescriptions as strangers to the faith of Christ and unable to share in eternal salvation." And we've been hit with this a lot, as if there's a defeating statement that we're invalid and that we're trying to do something that's heretical and not right. The fact is, of course, that Pope Eugenius was talking to Egyptian Catholics or Orthodox, whatever, and they had to do with these men who were not Jewish taking on the rite of circumcision before baptism. And this was in Egypt, and they were influenced by the Alexandrian Jews at the time. Well, this doesn't address our question, but this is what's been thrown at us as a critique. Now, 300 years later, in 1756, Pope Benedict XIV, writing an encyclical called Ex Quo, and I'll read just a simple couple of sentences there, "It cannot be absolutely asserted that the man Judaizes who does something in the church which corresponds to the ceremonies of the old law. If a man should perform acts for a different end and purpose, even with the intention of worship, and as religious ceremonies, not in the spirit of the law nor on the basis of it, but either from personal decision, from human custom, or on the instruction of the church, he would not sin, nor could he be said to Judaize." So there you have an opinion that seems to be totally contrary to what Pope Eugenius said.
That's a very beautiful, very valuable quote, because I think both you and I are continually accused of Judaizing for doing things with a very different end and purpose, but that reflect our Jewish heritage.
So I asked Archbishop Burke, how does the church deal with these two things, and how are we to understand and interpret them, especially in the light of the criticism that we're given? And Archbishop Burke says, well, first of all, everything has to be read in context. That's number one. That was part of his answer. And another part of his answer was that there has been a development of understanding in the way that the doctrines of the church are lived out. And we see that in many instances in the church, in liturgically and in other areas. So he found absolutely no problem, and he even made the point, I don't know where I can find the words, that we should be very careful in pulling statements out of context from sacred tradition, just like some people pull statements out of context from the scripture to make their case and make their point. And in this case, the criticism was being pulled out of context in a very different situation and being applied to something that's present today. I also made the point that this issue about the Jews and their living out their calling was a time, that time hadn't come back in the 14th century, 15th century, but it has come now. And he agreed with that, too.
Wonderful. So well, we've already come to about the midpoint of the show, and as is our wont, we usually break the show around now for a little musical break and a little station identification. So this is Radio Maria that you're listening to. The show is Salvation is from the Jews with your host, Roy Shoman. Our guest today is David Moss, the president of the Association of Hebrew Catholics. And we will be back in a couple of moments after a short musical break. I hope you continue to be with us.
To Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We now return to a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Shoman.
And even more significantly was the recapture of Jerusalem in 1967, which Father believed, as I do, was a fulfillment of the prophecy of Jesus in Luke 21:24, that Jerusalem would be trodden down by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles was fulfilled. The third great sign was a tremendously large number of Jews who have been coming to the faith, both in the Protestant world and in the Catholic world, since the end of the Second World War. Another major sign was the Second Vatican Council. Besides all the other things the Council did, it began to establish a new exploration of the mystery of Israel and to take up a new evangelization of the nations that had once been Christian and had ceased to be so. Those were the major signs, and Father Friedman believed that the time was now that the Jews within the church ought to take up once again their collective witness to the truths of God, and now in addition to all those truths revealed in the Old Testament, were the new truths revealed by Jesus in the New Testament, the truth of Jesus and the truth of his church and his sacraments.
Do you have a formal mission statement?
Yes, the mission of the association is to preserve the identity and heritage of the Jews within the church, of the people of Israel, so that they may serve the Lord, his church, and all peoples within the mysteries of their irrevocable calling.
Beautiful. I must say that maybe I'm a member of the Association of Hebrew Catholics for the wrong reason, because I'm tremendously grateful for the existence of the Association of Hebrew Catholics, simply because it is an Association of Hebrew Catholics. And I know that I was very lonely when I, as a Jew, first entered the church. It felt as though I were the first Jew in history to enter the church. I couldn't find another Jewish Catholic, and I was just dying to find one and meet one and talk about matters of mutual interest and just kind of commune with them. I called the local chancery and asked if there was any way I could get in touch with other Jews who had entered the church. They put me in touch with the Jewish Catholic Dialogue Office, which was busy trying to convince me that I was a mistake to be a Jew who was interested in entering the Catholic Church. And so, I mean, I was just, you know, swinging out there in the breeze, just really dying to have a community of Jews in the church. And so I know that doesn't seem to be the mission statement itself, but it's a tremendously valuable ancillary mission that you perform.
Yes, and I've met many, many people. We've convinced, or not that we ever convince anyone, it's always the work of the Holy Spirit, but we have done very little in the way of active evangelization of Jews, but yet we've had the experience that you just spoke about, Roy, of people coming and talking to us briefly, people who are already on their journey, already asking questions, already looking into Jesus and his church. And the very fact that we existed was simply a moral boost, that they weren't outside the normal pale of things, that this was an okay thing to do because there were other Jews that had traveled that path before them.
A friend of mine, you had a conference a couple of years ago in St. Louis of the Association of Hebrew Catholics.
Yes.
And a friend of mine who came said it was the first time in her life that she felt whole.
Yeah.
Was coming out of that conference. I mean, it's a tremendous service, because you're talking about Jews who are interested in entering the Catholic Church, but there's also the issue of Jews who have already entered the Catholic Church, who need some, feel a hunger for some kind of community, so they don't feel like, you know, there's some kind of, you know, half lion, half human hybrid or something, but there's something natural and normal and fruitful about being a Jew in the Catholic Church.
Well, that's true. And that was essentially what Father Friedman meant by preserving the identity and the heritage of Jews in the Church. The identity is that collective reality of Jews who belong to a single family, a single genealogical record, an ethnic, a divine ethnic identity, and the witness that the association provides to other Jews is exactly, provides that witness. Hopefully, as time passes on, that witness will even grow stronger.
Now, you mentioned in passing that one of the signs of the times that Father Friedman identified was the large number of Jews coming to the faith. Yeah. I know that everybody is kind of dying to have some numbers to attach to that, and it's very hard to do. Do you have anything along the lines of numbers?
Well, I've heard numbers that range from 200,000 to 300,000 to well over 1 million. And it certainly rivals most other periods of history, going all the way back to the time of Acts, to the apostolic period. But we don't have the numbers. One of the problems is that when you enter the church on the baptismal record, they don't record the fact that you're an Israelite. So you only have anecdotal stories of people who know about Jews who've entered. But we did a rough, and then in the Messianic Jewish world, they're very obvious because they're very active, very dynamic. And so I've seen numbers from 200,000 to 300,000 all the way to 1 million. What the actual numbers are, I have no idea.
I presume that the Association of Hebrew Catholics has the full endorsement of the church hierarchy, that's completely kosher, so to speak?
Well, not in a formal sense. To get the full endorsement, you have to become an entity within the church. And we're not. We're a lay apostolate.
But you have the blessing of your bishop and so forth.
We have the blessing of Archbishop Burke, now Cardinal Burke. He was the one who welcomed us into St. Louis. The current Archbishop Carlson has blessed us. The prior bishop, when we were in Michigan, gave us a blessing. So we have those blessings, and we also have the implied blessing or approval of many Catholic theologians and priests within the church. So we have a growing number of people. We also have plenty of opposition. I don't want anyone to think that we're a shoo-in. There's many people who believe, and I won't use the language they use, but who believe that we are a cancer in the church, and who will fight us. But these are also some of the people who don't believe the Holocaust took place or that Israel shouldn't exist. It falls into the same category of people who believe these things.
Let me go down that road a little bit, in part because it's been introduced. I think I know to whom you're referring, what groups you're referring to, since I think I have a similar cancerous nature to them. Sometimes these are actually people who reject the Second Vatican Council precisely because it exonerated the Jews of the charge of deicide. In other words, some of their schismatic tendencies to reject the Church of today flows out of a animosity towards the Jewish people and a resentment that the Second Vatican Council so strongly sort of gave them their blessing and taught, you know, then John Paul II spoke of them as the as our elder brothers in the faith and so forth. And it's actually anti-Semitism can be behind not only their rejection of a Jewish presence in the church, but actually a rejection of the post-Vatican II church.
Yeah, I think those things all flow together. And there's also a large number of people who've never really studied or learned about the Jewish roots, and they've picked up attitudes and ideas that are not always good, but there's nothing of ill will in them. They just don't know. And that's part of our work to help Catholics learn the Jewish roots of their faith. And as they learn it, they appreciate Judaism, they appreciate Jews, and they appreciate their own faith even more. So it's a long haul. It's something that Vatican II begun, and we present one aspect of it.
And to be fair, I suppose, to this sort of loyal opposition, it is true that the positive attitude towards Jews and Judaism that has been reflected in this century, and especially since Vatican II, wasn't always the case in the church, and they might somewhat legitimately get stuck with older statements of saints, older expressions of hostility and fear of Judaizing that go all the way back to the church fathers.
Right.
And they may be a little bit too attached to them and not ready to let go to them. Because it is true that in other centuries, some saints, some popes, even some church councils have spoken quite negatively about Jews and Judaism.
Yes. But it's interesting that except for some statements in one council, there has not been any formal teaching in the church that what you might want to call anti-Semitic.
Not formal teaching, but when things are written by saints or written by well-regarded theologians or whatever, you know, people tend to think of them as a Catholic expression.
Well, the transformation of human beings is a very slow process, and it takes centuries to learn the lessons of one generation and pass them on to future generations. So,
in this case, perhaps even millennia.
But
yeah. One of the very positive feedbacks that you have gotten, and one of the very positive signs of this very favorable attitude towards Jews and Judaism of recent times, was reflected in a rather unique interview you did with Cardinal, then Archbishop Burke. And I think in that interview you touched on many of the hot points, many of the most controversial issues that concern Jews who have entered in the Catholic Church. So I would be grateful if you could discuss, some of the questions you asked him and some of his responses, just kind of show where what the church thinking is today about the role and appropriateness of a Jewish presence and even a visible Jewish presence in the church.
Okay. I asked at that time the Archbishop Burke 5 questions, and these were the ones that we, as you mentioned, we've been challenged on. The first question concerned the continuing election of the Jewish people, those Jews who have entered the church, been baptized. We've had a lot of people who would say, no, the election is fulfilled in baptism, and after baptism, there's nothing distinctive about being a Jew versus not being a Jew. And I asked, of course, I didn't believe that, but it's one thing for me to believe something, it's another thing for what the church has to say. The church has never really dealt in any official capacity or formal capacity with these issues, except by inference. And as you mentioned, some popes, some teach, some saints, some councils by inference, but never formally. And we'll get to that in a second. Regarding the continuing election, Archbishop Burke's answers were, he said a lot, but the answers were very simple. What God has done once is done forever. God doesn't go back on his promises. God doesn't go back on the things he's established. So the election of the Jewish people remains true today as it was when he elected them through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that election persists in the church.
That's right. So the election of the Jews who do not recognize Jesus continues, and the election of the Jews who do recognize Jesus and his church also continues in their election as Jews as well as in their adoption into the Catholic Church.
That's right.
Let me read a quote of his from the near the end of that answer, just because it's so beautiful. This is Archbishop, now Cardinal Burke speaking. Once God made that election of the Hebrew nation, of the Jewish people, to be the light to the nations and to be the instrument by which all peoples would be welcomed into the household of God, he never turns back from that election. It remains today as treasured in the church as it has been from the beginning of that election. So a Hebrew Catholic has a very distinctive witness to give in the church, and we ought to recognize that. End of quote. So he's giving you his blessing for this distinctive witness of Hebrew Catholics in the church.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, his second question, the second question concerned the collective nature of that election. Is the election simply that of an individual, which in which case baptism would have the same effect and the distinctive election wouldn't mean any much? Or is it the election of a people? And he also agreed it was the election of a people. And that people, Israel, the Jewish people in the church, retain that collective nature, the collective election. And towards what purpose? To give the witness to Jesus and his church, just like the collective nature of the people gave a witness to the truth of God and his revelation in the Torah before Jesus. So that continues.
And again, let me read just a nugget from that answer of his, because it's just so positive. This is Archbishop Burke, quote, "It seems to me that is a great gift to the Catholic Church, that the collective identity as the chosen people would be cultivated." So he's speaking quite kindly of you, David.
Yes.
And of your work.
Yes. To have come to St. Louis was a greater blessing than I could have ever anticipated when he invited us here. In fact, I wasn't sure. He was such an Orthodox man, so well educated, well-formed in canon law. And the first spring we moved here to St. Louis in 2006, in 2007 we had our first Seder, and I invited him here. And I invited him with some concern that if he didn't like it, we'd have to move to another city.
Yeah.
Well, he loved it. He loved it. And he never stopped talking about it for 2 weeks afterwards, because he said you could see, experience the actual fulfillment that was wrought in Jesus and the church by living out, by participating in the Seder. Yeah. So he was a tremendous blessing.
And to put that in a little context, because I obviously wasn't involved with the activity indirectly at the time, before that happened, there were even American bishops who suggested that it was improper to have a Passover Seder in a Catholic setting. That somehow it was insulting to Jews or it offended them, and therefore, out of respect for the Jewish community, parishes shouldn't engage in Seders illustrating the Last Supper and so forth. And, of course, that was just individual opinions, and individual opinions heavily colored by the sensitive feelings of the Jewish community, but it was very useful to have this counterweight to that coming from Archbishop Burke.
That's right.
Let me read a quote from him from in the interview directly related to that Seder that you invited him to. "When I participated, for instance, in St. Louis in the Seder Supper, the Christian Seder Supper, I saw this in a wonderful way, how the Hebrew Catholics were bringing through this celebration an ever deeper appreciation of the meaning of the coming of Christ into the world, of his saving death, and then of the continuation of the fruits of his saving death through the Holy Eucharist," close quote. And let me put in a little commercial announcement. I think that if anyone out there would like to experience a Passover Seder in the light of Christ, one of these sort of Hebrew Catholic Passover Seders that illustrate the fulfillment of the promise of Judaism in the Catholic Church using the vehicle of the Seder, which is an ideal vehicle because, of course, the Last Supper was simultaneously the last sacramental Passover Seder and the first sacramental Catholic Mass. They could perhaps get in touch with the Association of Hebrew Catholics. I know they could get in touch with me through my website. Every year I end up celebrating perhaps a dozen of these in different parishes and Catholic communities for that purpose, to show the fulfillment of Judaism in the Catholic Church. End of commercial announcement.
Well, we can add another one. We have a little book called You Shall Be My Witnesses, which you can go to our website, our web store, and order, and it has Archbishop Burke's interview in here if you'd like to study it and make notes on the official. It's also available at no cost on our website as a PDF. We also have a DVD that has the whole interview that you can watch.
So, well, I can see we're both Jewish and Catholic, because okay, you have the booklet which you can sell and buy, or you can get for free, and you have the DVD which you sell and people can buy. But actually, the video is up for free also on your website, right?
That's right.
So one hand's Jewish, one hand's Catholic. Should we go on with the interview and other nuggets that came out of it?
The third question that I asked him was about observing various Jewish traditions, Jewish feast days, but in the light of Christ. And again, Archbishop Burke thought that was a wonderful one, and I think that was the one where he talked about the Passover Seder, if I'm not mistaken. Well, maybe that was another answer. But anyway, he answered it, and yes, he doesn't see any problem. He thinks it's wonderful. It's a tremendous contribution, witness to God's work throughout salvation history, and as long as it's done in the light of Christ.
And again, this is in the context of earlier attitudes which were not so favorable, including, unfortunately, one of St. Thomas Aquinas, that it was actually a mortal sin for Jews who had entered the Catholic Church to continue Jewish ritual observances. And I think that the resolution of that rather superficially apparent contradiction is simply that were a Jew in the Catholic Church to observe the Jewish ritual thinking it was necessary for salvation, thinking it was part of the process of salvation, it would be a denial of the saving act of Christ. But should they celebrate it in some other way, such as to give more honor and glory to Jesus for what he did and how he did it, it, of course, wouldn't at all have that character.
That's right. And he writes, I'll quote, like you were, I would encourage it very much. And I don't know of anything in the church which says that this is prohibitive or this is wrong for Hebrew Catholics to have these special devotions particular to their own heritage. And I would add, this is actually now the heritage of every Catholic, since the Old Testament and all that preceded it belongs to them as well.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of two saint stories, to just give this a little bit more of an imprimatur. One is that St. Edith Stein, after she became a Catholic, would go to synagogue with her Jewish mother and follow the synagogue prayers out of her Catholic breviary. Because, of course, they were the same prayers because they were largely the Psalms. So she would follow the reading of the Psalms in the synagogue out of her Catholic breviary, which actually touched and moved her mother very much. And the other is that I know I had a little interlude with the Carthusians, and at the time I heard of a fellow Carthusian monk, I shouldn't say fellow because I wasn't genuinely one, but I was just looking into it, of a Carthusian monk from a Jewish background. And, of course, the Carthusian monks spend literally hours a day reciting the Psalms, and he would recite them in Hebrew. He would recite them out of the Hebrew Psalms. And his superior, the prior, thought that was a great idea, a beautiful idea. So, and in fact, I'll digress with a little bit of a personal story. Early in my conversion, actually before I entered the Catholic Church, when I was still anti-Catholic as a kind of, proud Jew, but one who had come to recognize that Jesus was the Messiah and had come to recognize that the Blessed Virgin Mary was very special, but I was still anti-Catholic, I found myself in a Carthusian monastery with a tremendous chip on my shoulder and anti-Catholicism, but I would join the monks in prayer in the chapel every night. They would break sleep every night and sleep from about 8:30 to 11:30 and then go to the chapel and pray matins together for about 3 hours and then get another 3 hours of sleep or so before the morning prayers. And I would be there in the middle of the night standing in these stalls with these mostly elderly monks chanting in Latin. And they'd be chanting, "Oh, Jerusalem, should I ever forget you? Let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth," and so forth. And I looked around and I said, "Hey, wait a minute. These guys are all wannabe Jews." So I think the unity and the continuation of the liturgy speaks powerfully to the inner unity and continuation between Judaism and the Catholic Church. Sorry for that digression, David. I think you had more questions and answers with the...
Yes. This fourth question is the one that we get hit with the most in terms of being critical of us and our work. And this is the statement by Pope Eugenius IV in his Bull of Union with the Copts in 1442 from the Council of Florence. And I'll just read a brief sentence that was put out there. "Therefore, the Holy Roman Church denounces all who, after the promulgation of the gospel, observe circumcision, the Sabbath, and other legal prescriptions as strangers to the faith of Christ and unable to share in eternal salvation." And we've been hit with this a lot, as if there's a defeating statement that we're invalid and that we're trying to do something that's heretical and not right. The fact is, of course, that Pope Eugenius was talking to Egyptian Catholics or Orthodox, whatever, and they had to do with these men who were not Jewish taking on the rite of circumcision before baptism. And this was in Egypt, and they were influenced by the Alexandrian Jews at the time. Well, this doesn't address our question, but this is what's been thrown at us as a critique. 300 years later, in 1756, Pope Benedict XIV, writing an encyclical called Ex Quo, and I'll read just a simple couple of sentences there, it cannot be absolutely asserted that the man Judaizes who does something in the church which corresponds to the ceremonies of the old law. If a man should perform acts for a different end and purpose, even with the intention of worship, and as religious ceremonies, not in the spirit of the law nor on the basis of it, but either from personal decision, from human custom, or on the instruction of the church, he would not sin, nor could he be said to Judaize. So there you have an opinion that seems to be totally contrary to what Pope Eugenius said.
That's a very beautiful, very valuable quote, because I think both you and I are continually accused of Judaizing,
right,
for doing things with a very different end and purpose, but that reflect our Jewish heritage.
So I asked Archbishop Burke, how does the church deal with these two things, and how are we to understand and interpret them, especially in the light of the criticism that we're given? And Archbishop Burke says, well, first of all, everything has to be read in context. That's number one. That was part of his question, his answer. And this, another part of his answer was that there has been a development of understanding in the way that the doctrines of the church are lived out. And we see that in many instances in the church in liturgically and in other areas. So he found absolutely no problem, and he even made the point, I don't know where I can find the words, that we should be very careful in pulling statements out of context from sacred tradition, just like some people pull statements out of context from the scripture to make their case and make their point. And in this case, the criticism was being pulled out of context in a very different situation and being applied to something that's present today. I also made the point that this issue about the Jews and their living out their calling was a time, that time hadn't come back in the 14th century, 15th century, but it has come now. And he agreed with that too.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, we've already come to about the midpoint of the show, and as is our wont, we usually break the show around now for a little musical break and a little station identification. So this is Radio Maria that you're listening to. The show is Salvation is from the Jews with your host, Roy Shoman. Our guest today is David Moss, the president of the Association of Hebrew Catholics. And we will be back in a couple of moments after a short musical break. I hope you continue to be with us.
You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The program you just heard was a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Shoman.